Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, Six Capitals, Six Points of View, Brussels, the twin capital of NATO, the warfighter, and EU, the economic coalition of countries that are moving with one currency, the euro, in an environment that is increasingly difficult to manage because of inflation caused by pandemic, caused by spending and not adjusting the rates, caused by unknown sources from outside. But there it is. The price of food, we're told, in London, in Paris, in Berlin, has been rising these last weeks. At the same time, the cost of energy has eased. The winter has passed. But next winter has to be worried about, especially because there need to be solved new sources of energy. Russia is not going to be available. Professor, Brussels' point of view, the EU particularly, has to take care of all of its people, not just Ukrainians. Again, we've talked about there being limits to support from countries that have difficult economic environments. Do you still support the idea that this counteroffensive cannot come too soon for the EU anxiety?
Well, I always wonder if there are limits to support. What happens when you reach those limits? Do you simply stop supplying the Ukrainians, let the Russians win, and set the stage for further aggression, either by Russia or by other countries? I mean, wars are not things where you can say, well, that was a lot of fun, but I've got to go pick up my kids at school. It's 5 o'clock, so we'll take it up again tomorrow. Wars are things that capture countries, and the logic of wars begins to dictate the logic of politics in those countries. And for that reason, I would say that I tend to divide NATO into two parts. There are the sort of fat and happy members of NATO. I'm being unfair to them, I think, but really Germany, France, England to some extent, they are they're doing much more than they were, but I don't think they quite grasp the existential importance of this war for their own future. That is, if Russia emerges stronger and successful from this war, they're not going to be a kind of island, a sort of island of kind of Bermuda-like comfort just next to Germany. They're going to have to say, what the heck are we going to do? Because if we have lost, that means the United States is not reliable. It means that they're inadequate. It's a disaster. But there is, of course, there's another part of NATO, which is the group that are around Ukraine, and that know exactly the fact that it's just like being in the French Revolution. You're in line, and your head's going to come off sometime today, and you can go down the list and see how close it is, and when it's time for you to climb up on the platform. And those states have said that they will continue to fight, even if say France cuts off the vital supply of French ammunition, or the Germans decide that they're not happy with something. These other countries, of which I think Poland is going to emerge as the key player, because they're really building themselves up militarily, and they have no illusions about either the Germans or the Russians. They will go on fighting, and I think that what I've talked about before, the nine countries that are right proximate and then the ones that are either offshore or distant, they make quite a tough nut. So the idea that the war is going to end because some players withdraw, I think, is mistaken. The war will continue, and then the players who withdraw will say, "Wait a second, we have an actual interest in how this war comes out." Now, if we look at what has gone on in Brussels or in Europe, we find that there are, I just love this, it's so typical, procurement arguments. France is saying that we must procure only from the West, and particularly, I think, from France. This is obviously consideration, but when the question is whether the Russians or the Ukrainians are going to prevail in a war that's going to define the century, that's perhaps the instinct for the capillary. Greece is, of course, upset that Turkey is getting more and more involved. Turkey, of course, has a very strategic position, whereas Greece's position isn't really strategically critical, although it controls the approach to the Dardanelles to some extent. But Turkey is very important, and Turkey is putting lots of money into weapons, and they furthermore have opened up this corridor that takes them into Central Asia. So we want to be sure that we don't buy too much from Turkey. But on the other hand, it's very much in our interest that Turkey be on our side. So I think that the divisions, there are conceivable divisions in NATO, but I think that if they actually start to divide, they'll say, wait a second, this isn't where we want to go. The NATO countries, or at least Mr. Stoltenberg, who seems to be a sensible man, says that they're going to plan they're having a NATO summit in July. They're going to plan a multi-year program of support for Ukraine, which is probably a good idea because the American weapons are constantly late. I just heard that 60 jets for Taiwan that were ordered sort of 10 years ago. Now they've got some hang up in the production, and it's absolutely maddening to be an American ally. Although, of course, I think being a French ally or a Russian ally is nothing to write home about either. We've had some military activity from Europe. A Russian surveillance aircraft was coming over from Murmansk, and then it headed south into near British and Norwegian airspace, and we scrambled F-35As and Typhoon jets, and this is a sign that there really is life, just as this spotting of the Russian ships over the Nord Stream. This is a sign that these European militaries may be too small. Their political leadership may be sort of imponderable, but they're actually very competent at what they do. I mean, the Russians, if they send a plane sort of up in near the Arctic Circle and then start coming down, the Norwegians and the Brits are on it right away. Also, it's notable that today, Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN are set to discuss a grain deal. So I think that it's quite possible. I think that most of the indicators are that absent a Ukrainian victory this summer, that things can go on much as they are going, and that the attempt to change circumstances by denying a weapons system or something, it just isn't going to work. And what we should say is, look, we want these guys to win, so we're going to give them the best weapons that we have. But to talk about winning in today's foreign policy community is very much not quite comme il faut. I mean, you have to, everything has to be talked about trade-offs and order and all the rest. But I would say that what's really at stake here, above all, is international law. We cannot have the precedent of an invasion which yields the invader more territory than he had before, and which basically punches a sword through the not very thick stack of international law we have, which is very, very important. If we, for instance, if Putin is not captured, I mean, let's suppose Putin is captured, he does have to be tried as a war criminal. We set up this whole system of international courts and everything in the UN. This is all set up to try to avoid another war. And now we've got a war, and we've written down ahead of time what we're going to do to the bad guys that cause it. We have to do that. Otherwise, it's not going to work. If we end up giving away our whole, the whole legal position that the UN has spelled out in its charter and all the rest, we're just asking for it. We're just asking for another war. So I would say that we have to remember how high the stakes are, and that this is, you have to bear this in mind all the time. And unfortunately, none of the states involved, except those that are quite near Ukraine, quite have the sense in the marrow of their bones how consequential this is. This is not a sort of back pocket war. This is not a splendid little war. This is by far the biggest war that we've had since World War II.
Let's go to D.C. because there's a point of view there, Professor, that is not ready to continue the war. Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on Six Capitals, Six Points of View. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.